I know I'm not the only one who is looking around at today's youth and worrying about my own kids. I know I'm not the only one who sees the types of goings-on on college campuses across the US and Britain and much of Europe and says, oh no, I really hope my kids don't turn out like that. I know I'm not the only one who is seeing the rise in anxiety, depression, and self-harm and feeling like, what is going on with Gen Z? What is going to happen to our children? If you have had these same concerns, you are in the right place. And today, we're going to unpack them and see what we as parents can do about them. This is Hi Fam. I'm Avital. Welcome back, my friends. Today, I am talking to you if you have noticed that the kids are not okay. Now, let me just preface by saying that I know that in every single generation, there are old farts like me who complain about the rising generation. It was true in Aristotle's age, and it's true today. Our own parents were worried about our generation, and their parents were worried about theirs. It is a tried and true, well-tested tradition that each generation worries about the next. And I have to say that I have been blown away by the incredible resilient strength, bravery, emotional well-being, and backbone that I have seen in some of the young people around me, in fact, in all of the young people around me living through this war. So it is not at all to say that there aren't some fantastic, amazing, well-raised, well-rounded, strong, stable, moral individuals who are extremely young, who are in their early 20s or in their late teens even. Of course there are. But with that said, there is some cause for alarm because we are seeing a lot of documented trends that show that our young generation, we're talking about people in their late teens and early 20s, aren't faring very well. They're the first generation who is seeking less independence than their parents did, who are not interested in kind of blooming and in flying the coop and leaving the nest. They don't seem to want to get a job, to get a driver's license, to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, to move on, to move out, to grow up. Many of them say in surveys that they aren't ready, right? This is the generation of the perpetually unready. They're not ready for a real job. They're not ready for a real relationship. At ages when their grandparents and even parents were getting married and having kids and paying mortgages, they are still, you know, in their parents' basements playing Call of Duty 24/7. And so there is something very odd going on with this young generation. And a lot of excellent researchers and thinkers have been outlining what it might be, what has gone on with it. Now, I've thrown my own little bit, small percentage of this lot into the hat with my work on independent play. I think this is one key part of it. And thankfully, the researchers agree with me. People like Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Coddling of the American Mind, shared there an entire chapter about free play and the fact that there's such a decline in play in childhood means that children actually don't graduate childhood. They don't grow up. They don't mature because they don't go through the key markers and the key kind of rituals and rites that one has to go through in order to grow up, which involves taking risks, branching out, playing independently, testing the waters, growing your imagination, your social skills, all sorts of things. And as you know, I've documented that in my book, Reclaim Play, and I warmly recommend that you check it out. But that's only one small piece of the puzzle. There are other reasons that our children are stricken with anxiety, with all manner of disorders, with all manner of loneliness. And today I want to share some of the things that I'm seeing in this kind of cultural wave. Some people call it wokeism. I think that's probably the right term for it, although there's many things that go into it and many different trends that aren't necessarily to do with being on the radical left or with being entrenched in identity politics. And I'm not particularly interested in, kind of being a political commentator, I want to really look at the individual and what our individual children are being brought up in and the mindsets that are around them. And there are also like larger trends like the rise in cell phone use and smartphones, etc., or living through COVID-19 or all sorts of things that may influence it. Today, I want to share some of those things in no particular order, but I also want you to notice how these things are linked to each other. And I'm not going to linger too long on all the problems because as you hear me going through this list, I can imagine that maybe a dark cloud is going to start to form over your head, a cloud of fear or of rage or of, you know, indignancy and just worry about our rising generation. But I do also want to just name the beast so that maybe we can tame it, right? The types of things that we as parents of younger children, as parents of teens and tweens, need to be aware of and need to start pulling out the stops on. I'll also just say that I feel like I'm a little bit on an island over here. I know a lot of people talk about wokeism and the troubles with it, but not a lot of parenting coaches do. In fact, I don't know if any do. Not a lot of, you know, PhDs of psychology and experts and people with millions of followers on Instagram and people who have best-selling books, you know, New York Times bestsellers. A lot of them won't touch it because it's kind of, I guess, you know, it's cancel material. It's kind of a way to blow up your career. I don't have that kind of preciousness. I'm not worried about that. I really just want to speak about the truth. And I really want to speak to you, dear listener, who wants to build a robust, resilient family life and wants to raise resilient, strong kids and is worried about this wave. So what is the wave that we're seeing? And by the way, as I go through these, I might sound a little bit judgmental. First of all, I am. I do have judgments about these things. But also, I'm not actually coming at it from a moralistic standpoint, even if I do have moralistic judgments. I'm more interested in the outcomes. What are the results that this type of upbringing breeds? And what I'm seeing is that it doesn't work. What I'm seeing is that it really just doesn't work. So the first thing that we're seeing is virtual life, right? The kids today, the youngest generation, the kids in their late teens and young adults in their 20s, and notice how we still call them kids, even though they are adults. I was a parent in my early 20s. I had a job. I had, you know, responsibilities. Anyway, childhood has certainly elongated and stretched out into our early 20s, and I'm not at all sure that that's a good thing. But virtual life, this excessive reliance on digital technology and social media, really leads to a decreased face-to-face interactions, which fosters feelings of loneliness and contributes to distorted perceptions of reality. They are really locked in on their phones. They are really living virtual life. You may have heard the phrase, go out and touch grass. And that's kind of the advice that we give to kids who are, perpetually online, right? Too much online, excessively online. They don't actually know how to live in the face-to-face world as well. Now, one of the things that we do inside the studio, inside of my membership, is that we really work on tech, on our relationships with tech, and we work on being tech-free for stretches of time. One of the projects that I teach inside of the studio is taking a bit of a tech break at least once a week, but hopefully also once a day, and I outline all of the ways to do that. But our kids have to learn how to not be reliant on digital technology. They do actually need to learn face-to-face interactions. And particularly if they were locked down for a couple of years, these kids, many of them were, they missed a big chunk of that development, a big chunk of their social and emotional development that should have happened face-to-face. The second thing that is kind of swirling around our young kids is hookup culture, right? There's a decreased face-to-face interaction and everything's moving online and distorted perceptions of reality. And it also contributes to the prevalence of casual sexual encounters, non-committal relationships, younger and younger precocious puberties, which are influenced by societal norms, by online dating apps, and they really impact emotional well-being. What we know about hookup culture is that it's actually really not good for the individual. It actually creates a sense of loneliness, a lot of regrets, a feeling of being used, a difficulty forming trust and real relationships, and also a disinterest in forming long-lasting relationships such as marriage material. What we also know is that sexual activity is happening younger and younger. In fact, I recently read in Abigail Schreier's book, Bad Therapy, which plug for her because it's a fantastic book, an absolute must read. And yes, it's a little bit radical, but you know, I always say take what you what works for you and leave the rest, but it's definitely worth the read. Anyway, she talks about the fact that in school surveys, for example, kids as young as 8, 9, 10 are being surveyed about their first sexual interactions. This, I mean, come on, I think we can all use our common sense. This can't be good, right? This can't be good. Both incredible casual sex, but also younger and younger sexual encounters, and less and less meaning to those encounters brings with it a wealth of mental issues, right? Emotional problems. And this is well documented. It also is connected to the next thing, which is porn addiction, right? This increased exposure to pornography online, which absolutely negatively impacts relationships, mental health, self-esteem, all the stuff, right? And it also leads to a lot of body image issues, whether it's the body positivity movement, whether it's the gender ideology movement, the incline, the very severe incline in body dysmorphia, in body dysphoria, in the sense that there's something wrong with my body, that I need to harm my body, I need to starve it, I need to change it, I need to transition it. Whether it's because of exposure to idealized images and lifestyles in that pornography and digital media, which absolutely contributes to body issues, or whether it's a kind of indoctrination into a confusion through a social contagion, right? Where the sense is that, oh, you know, puberty is difficult, maybe I'm in the wrong body. And these are the kind of ideas that are being planted quite early in our kids' mind and quite rigorously planted and agitated. And that's the sense that if I, you know, mutilate myself, if I harm myself, if I hurt myself, or if I drug myself, if I starve myself, if I cut myself, all different ideas, by the way, that are often suggested through these surveys, through these mental health screenings. But also, as you know, they're on TikTok. The biggest influencers on TikTok are influencers who are talking about their transitions, who are talking about their self-harm, who are talking about their anorexia, all sorts of body-related issues. Or on the flip side, big influencers who are talking about being healthy at any size and who are morbidly obese and suffering terribly from those health issues on the other side of that spectrum. Either way, the virtual life, the porn addiction, the hookup culture, the constant kind of indoctrination into these rabbit holes online is causing these tremendous mental health challenges for young children. And that goes along with that kind of woke culture of identity politics, right? Where anything about me, my immutable characteristics, my gender, my race, my appearance, intersects with political and social movements and organizes myself around shared identities, right? There's this polarized, tribalized idea that we should judge people based on the color of their skin, that we should judge people based on their gender, on their sexuality, on any number of other issues. And this really creates that polarized, isolated sense. Rather than fostering unity and understanding, it actually leads to the victim Olympics that we see today, right? A massive sense that I deserve special treatment. I don't need to do any personal growth. I don't need to develop resilience or take on responsibilities or have any accountability. And what we see in that young generation is a very stark difficulty with work ethic, right? With the idea of putting in a normal day's work, earning their wage, not getting special treatment or special considerations. That's something that many of them find incredibly challenging and unfair, deeply unfair. What's interesting is that almost all of these things that I'm sharing here are seeped, drenched in cognitive biases. And of course, we have all of the regular challenges of teenagehood, such as substance abuse and stress and anxiety and depression, which are very much on the rise. A lot of massive fear about environmental concerns, really kind of doomsday, the sense that the world is coming to an end, the sense that they have been deeply served, you know, an unfair world, as it were, even though they are objectively the generation that has, you know, received the most prosperity than ever before. So it's a really odd situation to look at all of this and to note that our young people, many of them, not all of them, but many of them are truly struggling individuals, right? They're struggling with basic facts about biology, basic facts about history, with basic truth. They struggle if they hear a microaggression, right? They need trigger warnings. They need safe spaces. And they're desperately fragile. They can break down with big, you know, mood disorders, as they call it, or whatever the label they want to slap on it is, but basically tantrums, when they don't get exactly what they want, when they're not treated exactly as they want, when people don't talk about them exactly as they want. It's a very, very odd state of affairs. And with that, they also live in this kind of cancel culture environment where, because they've eroded individual freedoms and they've stifled free expression, there's a trend where individuals or groups are publicly ostracized or boycotted for perceived offenses, right? Or for controversial opinions. And that perpetuates the censorship, the intolerance, the illiberalism that we're seeing. But what it creates in the individual is a self-censorship. What we're seeing with these kids who are enamored with this ideology, who are enamored even with terrorism itself, who are apologetic for all sorts of behaviors that once we would have thought of as abhorrent, like pedophilia, who are truly confused, deeply confused, desperately and tragically confused. What we see is that they did not have authority from their own home. This is the result of many different things, like the lack of free play and like the rise in screen addiction, but it's very clearly the rise of permissive parenting, of parenting that was oh so gentle and so respectful and so conscious and so simple and so connected and so unconditional and so peaceful that it actually wasn't parenting at all, that it actually ended up losing all of the authority, all of the leadership, all of the clarity that parents are supposed to offer their children, all of the structure, all of the boundaries, all of the rules, all of the duty, all of the loyalty, all of the morals and the values that used to be ubiquitous with parenting are now completely dissolved from the scene. These are the children that have been raised in the self-esteem movement, in the gentle parenting movement, much as I appreciate it and much as I've learned from it. It is out of balance. It is no longer authoritative parenting, but has now slipped and slided all the way into permissive parenting. Parenting that is only interested in empathy, that is only interested in affirmation. Whatever the child says, whatever the child wants, whatever the child needs. And if the child is behaving in an unruly and insufferable way, then it must be because there's some kind of hidden trauma. It must be because we somehow damaged them. It must be our fault. It must be because they have some kind of disorder and we need to find a label for it and a diagnosis. The truth is that when you talk about parenting today, people have this false dichotomy. People think that you either go along with your child. You either affirm everything that they want, everything that they are. They want a phone when they're 9, of course. How could they possibly be left out of their friends? They want to go through a gender transition when they're 11? Of course. Otherwise, what might they do to themselves? They want the latest brands of everything? Yes, absolutely. We would never want them to feel like they were lesser than. We spoil them. We coddle them. We go along with their every idea, with their every whim. We constantly affirm, how are they feeling? Are they feeling sad? Are they feeling happy? And we're obsessed that they should always be happy and always have a smile on their face. Which, of course, is a paradox and is not the human condition. But they become more and more miserable the more permissive we are, the more we give in to them. They become weaker and weaker because they've never had to handle disappointment. They've never had to suck it up or deal with it or pull themselves together or knock it off. They've never had to wait for the things that they want. They've never been told that that's not acceptable. And so we affirm all of these things as the gentle, sweet, loving, empathic parents that we are. And the truth is that they then go and seek out authority elsewhere. Because they never received authority at home, they find the authority in the authoritarians, in the totalitarians, in the fascists, in the government, in mob mentality, in a movement that is deeply illiberal. The more liberal home they grew up in, the more illiberal the movement that they seek out in adulthood, because they're looking for that boundary. They're looking for that guidance and that authority. And we're told by therapists, we're told by teachers, we're told by society, we're told by other parents, oh, if you don't go along with your parent, then with your child, then you'll lose them forever. If you don't just do whatever it is that they want, they'll never, you know, they'll estrange themselves from you. They won't want to be with you. They won't love you. They'll leave you and never come back. Right? These are the options that are facing us as a parent. Either go along with and affirm everything your child says and does, making them feel the most special, amazing, and perfect in the world, or lose your child forever. We're told that if we set boundaries, if we're strict, if we're firm, if we're clear with our expectations, then the child will rebel. If you tell them that they need to eat healthy food in your home, then they're purposely going to eat junk when they're grown up. If you tell them that they can't watch TV for 8 hours a day, then as soon as your back is turned, they're going to watch TV all day, every day. If you tell them that, no, they do need to tidy their room, then they're going to hate you and storm off when they're teenagers. And I want to ask, where is the evidence for that? There is no evidence for that. It's not true that if you don't affirm everything your child wants, then you'll lose your child forever, then they'll rebel against you. The truth is that children actually don't respect permissive parents who give them everything they want. Who could? Do any of us have respect for people who don't have a backbone? It's very hard to respect someone who just rolls over and gives in and has no sense of values, has no sense of standards and expectations. I mean, we might like them. We might like that they give us everything that we want. It might make us feel warm and fuzzy, but we can't respect them. They don't commandeer respect. They don't earn respect because they don't have boundaries. They don't have clarity. They don't have a backbone. They don't have standards. And that's pitiful in a child's eyes. It's pitiful and it's also kind of dangerous. They feel that they can't trust their parent, that their parent isn't a rock, isn't hardy, isn't a load-bearing wall. They can't be leaned on because they whimper and dissolve. They're fragile themselves. Now, it's true that if you swing all the way into the other direction and you're authoritarian, you're punitive, you're harsh, you have very high expectations, but no warmth, no love, no support, that's not going to be great either. By the way, it has better results than permissive parenting. Authoritarian parenting is not great, but it has better results for kids than permissive parenting. Permissive parenting leads kids to substance abuse, to mental health breakdowns. It leads them to seek out things like cults. It leads them to be easily indoctrinated and easily influenced. It leads them to seek out this kind of controlling relationships in the future because they never had that kind of firmness, but not in a healthy way. And our kids do also look to escape authoritarian parents. They don't want controlling, punitive, nasty, mean drill sergeant parents either. They might feel that at least those parents really care and hold standards to them. But there is a third way. There is a third way, and I have no idea why our experts and leaders and gurus in the space have abdicated that third way, are letting it fold into ideology. The third way is authoritative parenting. And that's really why I created the studio, because I feel that I personally need that kind of structure and support and community of parents who are really stepping into their leadership role, who are claiming their authority, who are the leaders of their home, who have values that they are interested in imparting to their kids, who want to create a home that is strong and raise resilient kids, who can stand up to this nonsense, who have a sense of backbone, who have broad shoulders, who aren't going to succumb to all sorts of peer pressures, who are able to actually stand up to bullying or to mob mentality and not be tempted or swayed by substance abuse, who aren't going to be, addicted to their screens forever. Now, of course, everyone is going to have their own challenges, myself included, my kids included, your kids included, right? But surely there's something we can do as parents, and I know that there is, in order to mitigate those kind of risks, right? In order to bolster up our children, and rather than bubble wrap them and put them in safe spaces, instead make them strong. I don't want to bubble wrap my kids. I want to dip them in Teflon. I want them to come out into the world feeling like, yes, I know who I am. I know where I come from. I know where I'm going in this life. I know what's expected of me. I know where I belong. I know what I stand for and what I believe in. I've been raised with particular values, with expectations and with standards, and with a lot of warmth and love and connection. I feel deeply attached to my family, deeply grateful to my parents. I know that they did everything they did for my benefit. They weren't mindlessly controlling me, but they also weren't just going along with my every childish whim. They were here to direct me, to drive me, to help me fulfill my potential and my ambition, and to help shape me into a formidable young person, into a stand-up citizen, into someone who is able to take on responsibilities, able to get a driver's license, able to get married, able to get a job, able to hold up an adult life and not stay cowering in the basement. In order to do that, we need to build a strong family culture, because culture out there is very happy. They're just waiting there, tentacles are ready to grab at your child's developing brain. And I'm not saying that to cause alarm and to cause disease, although I guess, what can we do? Hey, that's reality. It is alarming. But I'm saying that to light a fire under you and to say you are the leader, not the teacher, not the doctor, not the experts, not the pediatrician, not I don't know who else, your neighbors, your friends, someone on Facebook. No, you are a parent for a reason. You went on this journey of tremendous responsibility for a reason. It's an adventure. It's exciting. It's the most important project of your lifetime. And building a strong family is not for the weak of heart. It is not for the faint of heart. I know that because we see what happens when people don't build a strong family, right? We see how those children grow up, flailing, confused, barking up all the wrong trees. And that's not what I want for your children. Inside of the studio, we have the leadership curriculum. And that's exactly what this is. We really kind of go through each area of our home, from the content that comes into our home, to the types of friendships that we work to build, to the routines, rites, and rituals, to the teamwork and the chores and the contributions, to the big vision, right? To every part of our home, and understanding that we are taking the helm. We are captaining the ship. We are going to lead this in the direction that we want it to go. Now, can we guarantee perfection? No. There will be mistakes. There will be rebellions. There will be regrets. But at least we're going to try. So if you'd like to learn more about that and sign up for the wait list, then just go on over to hifam.com/studio. And you can get on the wait list and join us next time doors are open. But whether or not you join the studio, I hope that this podcast was a reminder to you that you are the driving force. You are the captain of the ship. You are at the helm. And yes, there are some really bad ideas out there. They are waiting to sink their teeth into our children. And we are kind of that last barrier. We are that wall around the Garden of Eden. We are the boundary between our children and all of these ideas. And it is actually our responsibility to strengthen them, to protect them in a way, not in the sense of safe spaces, but in the sense that we're not just going to allow these things to wash through their brains, just like we protect them from drugs, right? Just like we protect them from abuse, we're not going to allow them to be swept away with ideas that drug and abuse them. I hope this was useful for you. It might have tweaked you. You might have heard some things that you agree with, that you strongly and powerfully disagree with. All of that is good. It's here to fuel a conversation. I hope you take this conversation and use it to start one of your own. Keep on living that high fam life, and I'll see you in the next episode.